Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy. I'm Joe Stapleton. He's my work wife, James Hardigan.
And I would like to say to everyone, including you, Joe, welcome to 2025, a new year and a new season.
We are 21 days into January. It's no more Happy New Year. It's all about Groundhog Day now.
Yes, it's true. That's coming up, right?
All right, we're hoping to do things a little bit differently this year, this season, shake things up, more guests, more personalities, different segments, more poker.
I mean, to be fair, this is something that we kind of conceived at the end of 2024, right? With your hand of the week, of the day, of the century, of the year, of the millennium. I think that's definitely going to be a regular fixture.
Yeah, we're going to put some poker in this poker podcast. A little bit of strat, some more nudity. Okay, maybe not what? That. But we all here kind of feel like the show needed a shot in the arm, and we're going to start rolling out some changes slowly but surely. Yes, it's been a while since we've talked. Not literally James and I have talked, but since we have talked.
Not in any great detail, to be honest with you, because we've had so much going on. I know we're going to get to that in just a moment, but it's been a full month since we recorded a podcast after Prague.
Yeah, and I guess you're right. We haven't really caught up ourselves yet. So we're going to catch up a little bit at a time, by the way. We're not going to have time to like go over everything that's happened in the last month all in this episode, especially because things are happening this week. So despite everything I just said, it's going to be somewhat business as usual this week, as it's that time of year for everyone to get their panties in a bunch about the Global Poker Awards. So as is tradition, as is according to lore, we'll be having GPI President Eric Dani on to speak to us about this year's nominations, which were released yesterday, plus the changes from last year, including some of the new and updated categories.
And we can't go any further without me congratulating you, Joe, on your not one, not two, but three Global Poker Award nominations.
Wait a second. One's for the book.
Yes.
One's for personality or TV, whatever they want to call it.
What are you doing right now, dude?
Podcasting.
There we go. There's the third one.
Okay. All right. I was making sure it wasn't three solo nominations, although we're all part of a team.
Oh, I love that. Okay. The fact you have to do the podcast with me means it doesn't count. I get it.
Well, there's lots of multiple nominees this year. I think Caitlin is the most. We'll get to her in a second. But joining us today on the show, in addition to Eric Dani, it's a two-guest show, everybody. Right there, I told you, we're ramping it up a notch. Eric Dani and double nominee Abby Merck will be on the show with us in just a little bit.
And spoiler alert, this is actually going to be a three-guest show. Because what else is coming up, Joey?
Poker. Talking poker with Team Pro Nick Walsh will be with us. James and I have decided that we're going to try to get better at poker a little bit.
Little by little.
We definitely need some help. Yeah, a little bit of strat with Nick Walsh in our new segment. James tipped it earlier. It's called Hand of the Century of the Day.
Hand of the Century of the Day.
Maybe Giles can do something. If not, it's still kind of funny. And the first super fan of 2025.
I think it's definitely funnier, by the way. Just leave it like that.
Just kind of like
Joe trying to do a special effect. Yeah, that's definitely the way to do it.
I've been called the Michael Winslow of my generation. The first super fan of 2025 is someone whose home I actually visited during my disastrous road trip last summer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have had me into their home. So that is a super fan right there. If you want to truly be a super fan, have your wife cook dinner for me.
Just to be clear, if you want to be a super fan, all you need to do is email superfan@pokerstarsint. That's pokerstarsint.com. You don't actually have needed to have personal contact in your home or anywhere else in the world with Joe. Yeah, sure. But I think we'll give everyone a shot. superfan@pokerstarsint.com is the email address to use.
Oh, and Michael's doing Goodfellas, right?
That's right. Yep.
Good news for Michael. I haven't seen Goodfellas. I did not do a rewatch. So it's going
to
be...
That's not one of the 40 movies you've watched since I last spoke to you.
It is not. It should have been, but I'm not really good at planning ahead. And I didn't think about watching Goodfellas till I didn't have any time to watch Goodfellas.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to have time today to do any kind of movie or TV chat. Ironically, I did a little bit of movie chat on YouTube yesterday. I'm going to try and do these live streams a little bit more often. So maybe next time, Joe, if you're available, you can drop in and we can talk about some of the films that we've both seen. Or if we get an opportunity on a future episode of the podcast, I'm sure we'll kind of catch up on what's hot and what is not.
You saw my list of like the, I have like another 15 to add to the list of all the movies I've watched. How much overlap do we have?
I think a decent amount, probably. I've been trying to watch a lot of the awards season movies as well, just to have a better steering this year on what is deserving and what isn't. And it helps that a lot of them are available on streaming services and or premium VOD right now. Anytime I don't have to go to the cinema is an absolute advantage. I think we have to kind of cut to the chase to a certain degree and explain, you know, why we had to push back the podcast by a week and why we haven't really had a chance to catch up properly in the last few weeks in the run-up to the start of this season of Poker in the Ears. And that is the fact that we both are in Southern California right now and things have been, well, pretty dramatic and pretty disastrous for the last 10 days.
Yeah, it's certainly, look, I'm going to say right now, I'm one of the lucky ones. I do own a home in Southern California. We were kind of surrounded by fires at one point, but the one benefit was that we were in the dead center of the circle. So, you know, we were surrounded, but as far from things as could be. I think an evacuation zone, the closest it got was about 3 miles from me. It got a lot closer to where you stay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I felt for a good 5 to 7 days we were on edge, both literally and metaphorically, because we were right on the cusp of as the evacuation zone and evacuation order zones were coming in. And it was pretty scary when you looked out and realized you got fires to the east, west, and north of you, and you can actually see one of them coming down the hills. But yes, I agree with you. Consider myself to be one of the lucky ones that we were not too adversely affected. Lost power for 48 hours, but in the grand scheme of things, when people have lost everything they have, when some people have lost their lives, you can't really complain about that.
No, and so we did want to say, it's still traumatic and stressful. I mean, James evacuated twice, I think.
Yeah, by choice. When we lost power, we decided just to do a staycation down in Orange County just to get out of the city, get out of the county for a couple of days. Because it's a miserable experience just watching Armageddon unfold while you have no power, no ability to cook, no internet. But yeah, I'd like to think that we're through the worst of it now.
Well, there were some people in the poker community who were really heavily affected. Yeah. I know that Robbie Jade Lou tweeted a photo saying that she had lived there. I don't know if she meant she no longer did because her home burned down or if a house that she used to live in, but
well, I was watching Tiffany Michelle's video yesterday that Poker.org put out, and I had no idea that they were one of the first to evacuate. I think their home in the Pacific Palisades was like on the first day of the fire. They did not have time to save anything. It was like, you have to leave now. And like so many people, just watched through their Ring camera as their home just burnt to the ground.
Really, really gross. So Tiffany and Will, who also works for Poker.org, I think Will lost everything in the Altadena fire. David Tuckman, I know that at the very least his wife is a teacher. Her school burned down. So, you know, really, really awful couple of weeks for some people and just kind of stressful and weird for the rest of us. So sorry that I'm not gonna lie. I was very distracted, James. I had other things going on too, but to just not really know, like we didn't evacuate, but we packed and unpacked the car 3 different times.
Same, just had to, living out of a suitcase because your go bags are just ready to literally go at any time. As I said, hope we are through
Now. I guess I should ask, by the way, because I've been gone for over a week and it's been really nice taking a break. I haven't been watching the news either. So like, I have no idea what's going on in the world. What's going on with the fire right now?
I think the fact that it's dropped out of the headlines tells you that it's now more or less under control. It is now being contained. People are returning to areas which were evacuated. I don't see any evacuation zones or evacuation orders on the map right now. But again, most of LA County is still under red flag warning because we're at that time of the year when there could be further
just another new one. Yeah.
Yeah, Exactly, exactly. So yes, I know obviously you've left town. You're in Tulsa at the moment, right, for the Run Good event?
I'm in Tulsa now. I was in Colorado first, and I only played a little bit of poker here so far. The Ambassador Bounty event was last night, and we had these really cool jackets made up. This dude, Three Coin, we should probably get him on the podcast at some point. Really interesting dude. He's like one of these sort of rich amateurs that plays on Hustler. He's a real character. He's got like a big white beard. But yeah, I played some poker in Black Hawk, Colorado. James, you've never been to Black Hawk. I hadn't either.
No.
This is so weird. So you're just driving through the mountains in Colorado, and it's like, you just like look to the side of the road. There's like a little mini Vegas. It's just like a mile long street with like just casinos all up and down, just hidden in the Colorado Rockies. And you know how a lot of the places we go to don't do the free drink thing that they do in Vegas? This place does that. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a pretty fun couple of days there. I went to Bally's and played poker, did a little cross promotion I had a bunch of stand-up shows in Colorado, and the poker room manager at Bally's, John, was like, yeah, come on in. I'll let you flyer the place if you come to a meetup game. And I had a couple of hands happen that I was hoping we could talk about at some point.
Well, I also have some poker to talk about. I went to Vegas this weekend, and even though there were some big events on at the Venetian and at the Wynn, I decided strategically to just focus on playing a couple of the Aria dailies, the 240 on the Saturday and the 160 on the Sunday, because I needed to test some stuff. I needed to fix some fundamentals.
Ooh, so what were you testing?
Just testing kind of like how I approach tournament poker and just trying to play better. As you said at the start of the show, just determined to...
Where did the litmus to check it against come from?
Just a general feeling that I am kind of not playing... I'm playing too tight. I'm playing too conservatively. I'm not taking table dynamics into account enough. I'm not adjusting enough. Just all round, just wanting to kind of, if anything, Joe, just give myself a little bit more confidence and feel more comfortable and feel better about my game. And I just felt that if
I know
I'm
what
going
this means. This means that you are going to bluff it off in level one. That's the leak that you and I both have, that we're not capable of bluffing early in the tournament.
Correct. And just approaching that mindset that if a tournament has multiple reentries, just be prepared to either go big or go home during those early levels with the opportunity to have that reload. And a $160 buy-in is the best place to do that. Anyway, I'm going to report back on that. And if you've got your hands you want to talk about as well. Nick's going to be with us a bit later in the show, so we'll get to that down the line. But right now, hot off the press, it is time to talk Global Poker Award nominations. And yes, we do have the president of the Global Poker Index with us as we welcome Mr. Eric Denny back to the podcast. Hello, Eric.
Hello, gentlemen. How are things?
Hi, Eric.
They're good with us. How have the last 10 to 14 days been for you?
Yeah, let's just say since January 1st, it's been 7 days a week, 10, 19 hours, I think.
Eric, is it like this? Like on December 31st, you're like, oh, fuck, we're doing this again, aren't we? Shit.
It's around December 20th, actually. And we have the Player of the Year going on at the same time. So
yeah,
literally, we finish Player of the Year and then we just jump. We work on it in December, but it's always last minute, right? So yes, yeah, sadly, with my wife is patient because my holidays are pretty rough these past few years.
Your wife is the best. Eric, I may have asked you this in the past, and I may ask you this same question every year for as long as we do this. Why?
I blame a French entrepreneur by the name of Alex Trentis.
He still wants to do it? Look, I know that guy.
No, he's got nothing to do with it.
He's tight with a dollar. He's just not torching money on this for no reason.
No, he's got nothing to do with this. Actually, okay. His money isn't even involved. We are
Okay. Well, couldn't have been.
Sustained company. So, he just got me addicted to it. And it's a addiction isn't always great. It takes a toll on my health, as you can see what I look like now. But it is a passion project, and we do feel, I remember my friend Hartigan not agreeing with me 10 years ago, maybe, but we do feel it's important for the industry. The fact that we're independent and we work with everyone, I think makes us the ideal organization to run the awards. And I think that the GPI and the Hanna-Barbera are respected brands in the universe.
Absolutely.
So
of course they
that's,
are.
That's why we do it. But don't get me wrong. There are times last year, I really thought, I even had conversations with Alex about not doing the awards anymore, because it does take a physical toll on not just me, but a lot of the team members at work. Again, we were all working about 20 hours just 2 days ago. It's not good for your health.
And of course, there's all of the negativity you have to deal with. And I put my hands up. I know I've been a squeaky wheel. I know I've been a detractor in the past. But one thing I will say, which I've been consistent about, Eric, is I've always saluted the intent. And I love the fact that what you're trying to do is shine a spotlight on parts of the industry and people within the poker community who maybe don't otherwise get the recognition they deserve. And if I rip the headline from your press release, if I take the top line of this year's nominations, the fact that you've got Caitlin Kamesky leading the way with 4 nominations, Marley Spragg with 3 nominations, in a game, in a community, in a world that doesn't have a lot of female representation, that is awesome. And thank you for burying the kind of next line, which is that Joe also has 3 nominations as well as Marley.
Yeah, to be fair, I didn't write that headline. I won't say who did, but we sort of...
Below the fold, I can't even believe it.
Thank you for saying that. It is important to us. We're very proud of the fact that I think about 30% of the votes we get are from women, you know, being involved, women are involved. We don't take credit for it because we send ballots to 497 people this year, I believe. And and to be fair, I was talking to my wife, Casey, last night. I think some of the best moments we've ever had at the awards, speech-wise, are from women. Some really emotional moments. I remember Angela Jordison talking about her dying father, told her he was proud of her to be a poker player and such. So, and just yesterday, there was a negative, of course, but Rania Nasruddin, you both know Rania very well. You know, she said her daughter told her she was so proud of her, and it's awesome. That, you know, she gets a nomination and hopefully gets a win in a month's time.
Well, we shall see. We'll go through some of the nominees in a moment. Two key questions to ask. First of all, as far as the nominating panel is concerned now, I know obviously you're kind of expanding or changing it every single year. How many people now, I know you can't go into specifics of who they are, but how many people get to vote in the major categories?
As I mentioned, we send ballots. Now, it's different because some categories we don't send to everyone, but in total, 497 people. I'd say about 200 average per category. Our success rate isn't great, though. We get about 50% return rate on ballots. So,
wow, you know, so your vote really does matter a lot if there's only 200 people voting. Holy shit.
Guys, I'll tell you, at the end, there's a few categories where every vote coming in, it was changing the top 6 in 2 specific categories. So some people were nominated because of the very last ballot that came in. Yes, every vote does absolutely matter, and we'd love for everyone to respond get the ballots. We know that it's a tight time frame. Sadly, that's just the way it is. We want people to vote as soon as 2024 is over. We want it to be fresh in people's minds. So there isn't really a solution for it, and we get people who are busy and stuff happens.
It's weird because at this time of year, I'm just like, oh wait, stuff has to start up again. Oh, I'm not ready.
Yeah. Yeah. The other question I was going to ask is about changes year on year. And one thing I noticed as someone who did go through most of the categories is, my God, there's a lot of them this year. How many have you added or changed?
Yeah, I think we added 8 this year, and some were last second too. We had to order from our trophy company, and they weren't too happy with the changes because they're printing as we speak. Yeah, it's tough. And you know, we really, really, really emphasize or want to emphasize that these awards were built for the players, as they are the life and lifeline of this game. However, you know, media-wise, you know, things are changing so much. You know, there's so many categories that did not exist 3 years ago. And these people need to be recognized. And to be honest, guys, these people promote, not willingly promote the awards better than most people do, right? They're excited to be nominated. We get a lot of times where, you know, poker players are trained to be more stoic and not to be reactionary so much. So, you know, we don't get much love from those people, but from others, you know, you mentioned Caitlin earlier, one person that was, you know, excited to again be nominated. She's won 2 years in a row and is up for a 3-year streak. So yeah, it's a lot of categories. I can announce now that not every category will be announced at the awards because Poker Go does not want a 7-hour stream. I don't think anyone does. I don't think.
Oh my God, you're going to do what the Oscars do. You're going to basically take best achievement in sound editing is going to be like kind of done during a commercial break. And like other winners this evening were.
James, he's schluging categories.
You're schluging categories. Well, let's go through some of the kind of changes, I guess, and to which kind of, I guess, affect stuff that we work on. Best episodic series. This is an addition, right? Which is I guess an acknowledgement that best video content was covering a very, very broad spectrum.
Yeah, it was getting that category is getting complicated. We did the same thing with best written and now a best book. I'll be honest, I didn't realize there were so many books still being published in poker. So we had a list of 30 some books. But best video, yeah, it was, you know, the goal again was to not have that many awards. I think we have 12 year one, which was now 10 years ago, by the way, at the SLS in Beverly Hills. But, you know, we had to expand and it made for better categories, better candidates. And I'll be honest, the final four in each category is spectacular. And, you know, we're just happy to see not only that, but also happy to see a lot more non-American, non-English speaking docs being, you know, being shown some love as well, which is exciting for me.
Eric, I got a couple of questions about the process. One is, how did you guys get to the long list? Do you just like throughout the course of the year, just start writing things down right away? So that way by the end, you haven't forgotten yet.
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, we do what the Grammys do, what the Oscars do. And it's, you have to submit, right? I mean, if Drake wants to win best album, his record company has to submit it for it. In poker, that doesn't happen. So yeah, we chase a lot. We reach out to a lot of people. I reached out to my friend James about some specifics on some events that he had covered. So we reach out to a lot of people. I think that's something that we need to be even more aggressive on asking more and more people for their votes. You know, in the end, we say that we do our best. We want to wash our hands of it. We don't want to be the ones, you know, putting all these people on the short list. We'd rather it be organic and natural.
Yeah.
But just the nature of the business just doesn't allow for that. And so that's it. But yes, I mean, we already have, I think it was 15 items already collected for the 2025 version of the award. So yes, we've already started collecting for next year.
So this category, Best Episodic Series, obviously we're delighted to see The Big Game on tour nominated alongside Poker Go's No Gamble, No Future, the Galfond docuseries, and the Winamax series, Inside the Mind of a Pro. While we're kind of like blowing smoke up our own asses, let's talk about Best On-Air Talent. So this was previously Best Broadcaster. It's been rebranded, but it's effectively the same thing, Eric?
It's sort of the same thing. Yeah, we just thought that broadcaster, again, with the changing of the times, that title was just needing a refresher. We might go back to it. You know, we didn't receive any negative feedback about it. I sort of like it. Again, it defines, actually it doesn't define it any better. I think you're right. We got the same people that we had last year. Our goal wasn't to necessarily have different people for the category, but it was to try to refresh the word broadcaster, which again can be difficult for some.
So James, I wrote to Eric and I said to him, look, Eric, I really think that when you send out the official voting that people should know that they're not just voting for me with James Hardigan, but they're voting for me by myself on Hustler Casino Live, and they're voting and all the different things that I do. I feel like I should get nominated 4 different times is what I'm saying. And Eric refused to send out that email.
I think you should just be grateful that you've been nominated, because not being funny, and I had to go back and check. So the award that you actually won back in 2016 was at the American Poker Awards.
That's
and
right.
And was for media personality. I thought it was a presenter or commentator award. So this is the first time that you've been in contention for this award, right?
Well, this award didn't exist.
That's what I mean. Since this award, the broadcaster/on-air talent Award has been part of the Global Poker Awards.
I haven't won it.
This is your first shot alongside three people who have previously won it, right? Jeff Platt, Nick Shulman, and Ali Najad.
What's funny is that I'm always okay with not winning it because I'm like, I already have one, and now James is telling me that one doesn't count. So now I'm pissed.
They all count. They all count. Gentlemen, in a now perfect world, everyone would have a trophy. My goal is for everyone to have a trophy. That's the goal.
I totally agree with you, Eric. I absolutely. But yes, it is an honor to see my name up there. I like it. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I like it a lot. Yeah.
How incredible that in the year, Eric, you decided to start recognizing poker books, Joe would actually publish a poker right? book, which is one of the four nominees, alongside one of Dara Khani and Barry Carter's strategy books, Nate Silver's On the Edge, and the autobiography of Tom McAvoy. I mean, could you get any more different than the Nate Silver book, which actually is up on the shelf there, and Joe's book, which is back in London? I do have a copy and I have read it cover to cover.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, part of that email that Joe said he wanted to be nominated four times in Broadcaster, he also said, don't forget a comic book is a book. So we had it in there and he got nominated for it. But
I actually was freaking shocked. I was shocked to see my name on the long list for that. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess I did write a book.
No, it's a book. It's a book. We researched that as well.
You have been talking about / shilling endlessly for 6 months. You've then had this epiphany. You went, oh yeah, I wrote a book.
I mean, so much has happened since that book has come out that yeah. I sometimes forget. Like, I'll go catch up with a friend. I'm like, oh yeah, and I wrote a comic book.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be reminded of it in an awards ballot.
So Eric, one of the things that Joe and I talk about is the fact that we like the fact that year on year, different people get recognized, or I don't want to say it's their turn to win, but that you don't have a situation where
we're socialists with poker awards.
Yeah, yeah. So if we look at Best Podcast, obviously delighted to be nominated again alongside the Chip Race, alongside the Poker News Podcast and Thinking Poker. And I think one thing that a lot of people have said is Thinking Poker kind of deserve it. So hopefully they finally get the recognition they deserve. I know it doesn't work like that because it's based on who the nominating panel decide, but that would be my pick objectively. That's what I hope would happen this year. And whilst we're talking about people that we know, people that we work with, best live stream. Talk about going from hero to zero. We won it last year. We don't even make the final four in 2025. Yeah. But I guess, again, in terms of like sharing the love, I would be very happy to see Triton win it this year. I kind of, again, feel it's
they got a good product. Why not?
Yeah. They have got a very good product. And it kind of feels just that they get the recognition this year. So, industry person, Francine, you did it, Joe. You are the ultimate campaign manager. You got her nominated 2 years in a row. And again, I think obviously she's up against some heavyweights there.
I think we got a shot this year. Wait, so Eric, do you know who the winners are already or no?
I do.
So there's no people, I should be trying to read your face just a little bit, but I don't want to. So I'm just gonna put my hand up and not even look at you. I think we got a fighting chance this year for Francine.
Okay. 100% honest. Okay. I don't remember who wins. I try to delete that from my brain as soon as I see it.
I believe you.
I'm trying to do that too. No, I really don't. I really don't. I think she's got a 1 in 4 shot. Is what I think.
That's an amazing bit of analysis there. From
Francine
from
is great, by the way. I finally got to meet her last year at the awards, and she's fantastic and really a good representative for the game. I was really happy to meet her last year.
I mean, she gets to take credit for us.
Right, right.
No, we take the credit from...
Right.
Anyway, Gregory Chauchon, Matt Savage, and Andy Wong are the other nominees in that category. So another one I noticed that's been split, Eric, and I like the fact that this has happened, is you now have an award for Best Tournament Director and an award for Best Director of Poker Operations. And obviously, I'm thrilled personally to see Kerry Jane Craigie nominated for her work as Director of Poker at the Hippodrome, alongside Ben Irwin at Thunder Valley, another Director of Poker Ops I'm a big fan of.
Great guy. Everybody loves him.
As far as Tournament Director is concerned, I was really surprised, pleased, but surprised that 3/4 of the nominees are European. You got Toby Stone, Nick O'Hara, and Luca Vivaldi alongside Ray Pulford, who's the only American nominee.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing in the industry category. The industry category has three non-Americans, and
that's true.
That's refreshing. It's great to see. Yeah, I think it just speaks to how the goal of the Global Poker Awards is finally coming through, that we do recognize more and more people in other countries, but it's also that those people are being recognized before the awards. You know, there's some people on these lists that people might not have known 5 years ago, but now because of good people, some like you two, we now know Francine Watson much better than we would have known her 3-4 years ago. So that's important too, and that's the kind of goal. And
I'm always building bridges.
You are. You're doing great.
I'm connecting cultures. I think, James, when it comes down to that category, though, the tournament director category, think about all the terrible stories we've told about awful decisions being made on this podcast. And what country do all of those awful decisions take place? America. In what country do we really highly regard the tournament directors? Not America. Sorry, American floor staff.
I mean, obviously, as you've highlighted, Eric, a lot more categories this year, so very hard to go through everything. So I would urge everyone who has an interest in this to go to globalpokerindex.com, to go to the GPI's website and take a look at all of the categories, because it's very tough to just go through everything. But best event, I guess there are two events that we work on, which are in there: the Irish Open main event alongside the EPT Barcelona main event. Plus, you've got the Club WPT $5 million Invitational. And does the World Series of Poker main event get nominated every single year? I guess it should when you consider it has like 10,000 plus entries every year.
And it's the New York Yankees of the I was going to say the Manchester United, but that's not the case this year. They suck, and I'm happy about that. But they're the Dallas Cowboys. And they're huge. They should win most years, but the years they don't, you know, it's not bad. I remember Brent Hanks and I having a conversation about that, about WCP had won, I think, 6 straight at that point. And he said, it's good to have the evil empire there, because when someone else wins, the PSPC, I think, was the first one to break that streak. That makes it even more special. So it's good to have certain categories where someone dominates. And I think WSOP is, again, 1-4 shot, but I think they're always the favorite coming in, and that's okay. They deserve it too. They run a fantastic event.
I've heard of it. So, you know, I tend to vote for the ones I've heard of.
I've got some pictures from like 2005 of Joe being at the World Series. We don't want to see those pictures. It's rough.
I'll continue paying you to not release those.
So no real surprises in the best streamer category. Ape Styles, Bert Stevens, Spraggy, Lex, the four in contention there. One question I wanted to ask you, I've got a couple of questions that we need to get to, actually, Eric. Best X/Twitter personality is still a thing. Is this an award that you could see changing in future years to be about other social platforms, that maybe Instagram, TikTok will become more influential as people desert this platform?
Yeah, it's going to be a category we're going to revisit next year. To be honest, in November, we had our team meetings in Malta, and leaving Malta, we weren't going to do the category this year. But then we just decided last second to just bring it back. Not last second, but actually in December, we decided to bring it back one more year. But I'm with you guys. You know, it's not a platform that shares love and joy, spreads love and joy the way it used to. So it is something we'll look at. And I think even people not on the short, that are on the short and long list, for a lot of them, they don't use it the way they used to either. So it's something we'll definitely look at.
Yeah. And the final question I wanted to ask you before we actually speak to a Global Poker Award nominee is the Player of the Year categories. These are already announced, right? Because these are not voted on. These are decided by points. Can you just summarize how the kind of calculation works without going into too much detail about the algorithm, but just a basic overview about how Player of the Year is assessed and who the winners are in those respective categories?
Yeah, for our global player of the year, which it was an incredible race, David Coleman is the winner. Basically, final table and event at Seminole that gave him, I think it was 13 points and took the title from Jesse Lonis at the very last second. I think he won by 3 points in total. So for that race, it's the top 13 scores, the top 13 qualifying GPI scores from the year that are used. So that's why when it gets to the end, all these champions have 20, 25, 30 scores. So just a one final table at Seminole gives you just 11 points instead of a full 200 points. So that's how the races are quite exciting at the end. Our female player of the year for the second time ever is Cherish Andrews, who beat out Chrissy Fox, who is a multi-time, I believe four-time winner of that title. She is the most dominant female player ever on the GPI. And that says a lot, knowing that Vanessa Selps, you know, ruled the GPI for the first 4 or 5 years of it. The mid-major player of the year is Han Fenn. He plays mostly in Houston and in Las Vegas. And for that category, it's your top 13 scores for events that are $2,500 and lower.
Right.
So that celebrates, the more weekend warrior or more grinder category. And I think those are the three races we run. I might forget one.
Yeah. Jesse Lonis gets the award for most weeks at the number one spot.
Listen, one of my biggest inspirations, we're working towards new websites for the GPI and the Hendon Mob, but we've been working at it for 3 years now, so I'm not guaranteeing anything.
You're going to build an entire website just for Jesse Lonis?
That's right, because he deserves it, because he loves chasing trophies.
He's the greatest.
That's right. No, but I do take a lot of inspiration still to this day from what Billboard does. And I really do like what Billboard does, how they present their rankings, the type of stats they have. And of course, one of their major trophies is most weeks at number one for a single. And I assume Taylor Swift has won it 17 years in a row. It differentiates. It's different from, we didn't have a trophy that would celebrate the best GPI player of the year because it rolls over 3 years. We just decided to add a category for the person that spent the most time at number one, which was Jesse Lonis.
Cool. Well, Eric, we will see you in Vegas at the ceremony on February 22nd. Looking forward to that. And I should highlight that one of those players of the year, the female player of the year, Cherish Andrews, we're hoping to speak to her on a future episode. But right now, we are thrilled to be joined by double nominee Abby Merck. She finds herself up for Rising Star in Content Creation, plus Best Short Form Video, which he made with Caitlin Kameski. Abby, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
And just to be clear, Caitlin has enough nominations, so you should basically take ownership of Best Short Form Video.
Caitlin's the GOAT. I seriously think she's going to ship at least two of them. Hopefully one of the ones that she ships is the one with me, because that would be quite fun. We've actually been practicing our, I sent her a joke this morning. I was like, just in case we win, we're up against some tough competition, but just in case, here's the joke we should make. So we'll see. That one it's in the works.
And this is your first nomination ever?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like, I was there last year for Poker News, actually. I was just working it as, a reporter. Like, I was getting video and making B-roll videos of it, being like, look how cool it is. And then, I was supporting my friends last year, too. Like, Greg won one last year. I was quite excited about that. So it's very funny to be on the other side of it now. I feel very grateful, though. It just kind of means, my hard work's been paying off. So it's a good feeling.
Yeah, let's talk about hard work and the process. As someone who, I'm very interested in comedy. I'm very interested in how people do these things. Walk me through how you go from getting the idea to putting something out there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think my process is a little bit different than other people because my biggest thing I think that differentiates me is that I'm not afraid to fail, and I fail a lot. Like, there will be posts that I put out where I'm like, this is kind of funny, I'm just gonna put it out there, you know what I mean? And I just continuously do that. And you have to understand, the reason why I started got into content from the beginning was to make people happy and to make people smile. So you know, someone put it best the other day. I was just reading about this. It's like each like means you made someone like marginally more happy. So it's like, you know, even if this doesn't hit to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people and it only hits to like 20,000 or something like that, like you're still making people happy. So I'm actually quite okay with failing and like, you know, in the sense that a lot of my stuff is not going to hit for a lot of people. And some people will think it's the funniest thing they've ever seen. So I don't know, just like being willing to try things. And, you know, I think I was naturally always kind of sarcastic. So a lot of my humor is pretty sarcastic. So I think that resonates with a lot of people too.
I really appreciate your self-awareness of knowing that like not everything is going to land or not everything is stuff that you're maybe necessarily even that proud of. I think it's good to recognize that. I think also that, do you remember when I met you at Philly Live, what the advice I gave you was also, which maybe you were already doing it?
Just keep trying.
Was to keep doing it. And it doesn't really matter if it's all good, because that's what's, you know, that is the hard work that you have to put in. So, you know, I'm kind of just proud, I guess, a little bit that we had that conversation so long ago. And now you really are the thing that I was like, I think you could be a thing in poker. And you are. I did want to ask you about, you know, you were the main character of poker Twitter during EPT Barcelona. How did that feel?
I figured this would get brought up.
I just want to know how, I don't need you to go over what happened or rehash. I just want to know how it felt.
Okay, so it was very interesting because it was the first time where I had like experienced negative feedback on such a public platform, to be totally honest with you. Like, I'm very competitive with myself, so like I'll always admit like, you know what, maybe this isn't my best, but like maybe it'll make someone smile, like whatever, I'm just going to put it out there, whatever, right? Not every, like it's okay to hit singles sometimes, you know what I mean? But this was the first one where it was like on a massive scale, like it was like 200,000 people viewed it in the first like 12 hours, and I was like, whoa. But I have this rule for myself that I think is really powerful, and it really helped me through that. Cause at first I was like upset. No one likes receiving feedback, like negative feedback, right? But no. I have an 11-minute rule for myself where basically for the first 11 minutes after I experience any type of feedback, good, bad, like whatever, the first 11 minutes, like I'll really sit with it and I'll think about it and I'll process my feelings and like let myself feel things. And then I just move on. And it really helps me, like, to be honest with you, because 11 minutes is the perfect amount of time for you to, like, go through whether or not you're, like, crying or whether or not you're, like, frustrated, angry, you're yelling, like, whatever it might be. Like, it just allows you to, like, experience that emotion, like, in full. And by the end of the 11 minutes, you're like, wait, that wasn't that bad. Like, life goes on. You know what I mean? It's kind of a short-winded mindset. So I just really, like, want to emphasize to anyone else, like, that genuinely – what others think of you doesn't matter as long as you think good about yourself and you know that you're doing the right thing and it came from the right place. Like, my intention was to get people talking about the Astraeus Cup, and guess what? People were freaking talking about that Astraeus Cup. You know what I mean? So I did my job. You know what I mean? Like,
I love it. I love being able to twist that into a positive too. That's fantastic.
Just very quickly, Abby, remind us of the Abby Merck origin story. I mean, how did you get into this weird world that is the poker community and decide, hey, I'm going to create content about this game and about this industry?
Yeah, so basically I started playing a couple of years ago through Poker Power. The founder of that I actually know quite well. She's like a family friend of ours. So she told me to learn poker. And originally I was like, that's a weird thing to suggest that I gamble, right?
Can you help us get her as a guest on this podcast?
Yeah. I'll shoot her a text. But yeah, she told me to start learning. And then like basically the rest was history. Like, I fell in love with the game. And honestly, I'm not going to lie, when I first started playing, I was way better than I am now. But like now, then I started making content. I actually had a goal for myself this year that I was going to put one short out a day and just see what happens. Oof. And that obviously worked out quite well for me. So I'm fortunate in that regard. But it took a lot of hard work for sure.
Abby, let's say that you had unlimited resources, a budget, a crew. What would you do with it? Would you make the sort of same sort of content you're making now? Or do you have aspirations of moving beyond just the solo creator or even just making this your production bigger?
Yeah, I think one of my goals going future, like if I really did have an unlimited budget, just because time is money, you know, and everything takes so long. I've really been getting into long form recently. I've released a lot of vlogs that have done pretty well, but I've really like spent a long time on them because they take a long time. And to tell a story efficiently and to tell a story well, it's something that requires a lot of practice. And like the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it, but you just have to like keep hitting it. You know what I mean? And so like realistically, if I had an unlimited budget, I would definitely outsource some of that so that I could be more focused on like filming rather than editing. It's pretty much what Wolfgang did too. Like he's one of my good friends as well. And like he was talking about, you know, in Chicago, like we used to play and then he would literally, not kidding, like be leaving 1-3 sessions. Like this was multiple years ago, obviously, but like leaving 1-3 sessions to go edit. Right. And I'm like, what a weirdo. Like, what is this guy doing? This was like way before I started making content. And now I'm in the same boat that he was in where I'm like, yeah, this game is profitable, but I have stuff that needs to go out, like bye, you know what I mean? So it's a very different thing. So if I could focus more, and like now, right, he's the perfect example of someone who just plays, shoots everything off to someone else who shares his vision, and then like makes good content, right? And there is like a teamwork element to that too. So I think that
there is.
If I could find someone who like understood my vision, like it'd be great to outsource.
That's
some
the key.
Of that. You know
that's
what I
the
mean?
Key. It's not just finding people who are good shooters slash editors, but it's people who understand your mindset, your vision, as you say, and are going to make the content that you would actually make yourself. That is very, very hard to find someone who's in tune.
No doubt. Especially when you're making humorous content. Like I'm sure
I can't
you
do
can
it. I can't outsource anything to anyone. Yeah. Also because I'm a control freak. So I always, even someone is helping me, I'm like, no, I'm going to change this one word. That probably is just a lateral change, but I have to make sure that I did something.
Yeah.
It's never like, oh, this is perfectly done. This is exactly my voice. It's always like, oh, you're close.
No, exactly. Yeah. And it's like even something as simple as where to cut, right? Do like a hard cut to like a zoom in, right? Or like something as simple as that makes or breaks the humor in it, right? So it's very fine science and it's very hard to outsource. But if you can find someone, just pay them like whatever they want. You got it. You know, like it's invaluable. I'm telling you.
My buddy Jesse does the social media for Poker Night in America, and I think he does a great job. I'm always like, man, I wish I could afford to take you away from there because I think you would do some fun stuff with our hands. Abby, one last thing. Do you ever get writer's block?
Oh, my gosh. Who was it? Lance Bradley, I think, just posted this on his like Instagram story or whatever, but it was basically a short saying there's no such thing as writer's block. It's only laziness or it's like stupidity basically. Right. I was like, wow, what an interesting take. And I was like, cause realistically I would say that I do get writer's block, but it's not that I don't have the joke that I want to make. It's that I don't know how to express it in the best way, I guess.
Okay. Or, like, so you don't get writer's block for the concept. You always know the concept. It's just how are you going to, okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Definitely. But I'm expressing it. It's like you could go a bajillion different directions, especially on shorts. You know what I mean? Which trend do I play into? Which, you know, which scenes should I select to convey this in the best way? It's very difficult. I'm telling you. Very difficult.
Awesome.
Well, Abby, best of luck with
one month,
literally 1 month to go. We'll see you in Vegas on the 22nd of February.
Yeah, I was
going to say
congrats to you guys. Shout out for this podcast being on there as well.
Thank you. Thanks
indeed.
Very much.
So exciting.
And triple thanks to triple congrats to Joe for the book and the on air talent nomination.
I can't believe I wrote a book.
Well.
I'm still fucking what? I wrote a book? Are you serious?
I have it right over there. Actually,
it's got pictures in it. At least
it's too cool. You guys are the coolest.
Thanks, Abby.
We'll see you in a few weeks' time.
Sounds good. See you soon. Bye, guys.
And a quick reminder that all of the nominees for this year's Global Poker Awards can be found on the website globalpokerindex.com. And yes, the ceremony taking place at the PokerGo Studios at Aria on the 22nd of February. And I believe it's live streamed, Joe, so everyone will be able to watch it.
Sure. I don't know. Who would want to? What do you come on.
Without the free drinks, it might be a different experience. Okay, do you want to do your big, bold intro for this next segment again?
Hand of the century of the day.
That was good. No notes and no processing needed. Gilo, leave that just the way it is. Nick Walsh, our friend, our colleague, Team Pro Extraordinaire, is with us right now to do some poker analysis. How you doing, Nick?
I'm really good. How are you guys doing? Happy New Year. Happy Christmas, obviously. And also, is this the award-winning and also now nominated, GPI-nominated podcast that you've invited me on?
Yes, it is indeed.
It is, but we're not winning this year, so we're not really making a thing out of it. we have no chance.
No, I'm good. Thank you for having me, guys. It's always a pleasure.
Not at all. And I'm sorry, Nick, that the live stream that you're a key part of is not even a nominee this year, having been the winner last year. But
they didn't nominate his Hippodrome streams?
Nope, not there. Maybe next year. So Nick, I the reason why you are here is that we are trying to play more poker this year, and mm-hmm. we've both been playing a bit of poker. And I, as you know, because we have numerous conversations about this, have no delusions about where I go wrong. I don't profess to be a great player or even a good player, but there are times when I do want to incrementally improve. So there are spots which I know are kind of like, I don't know what to do here, or spots where I may think I've butchered a hand. And I'm pretty sure Joe's in the same boat. So we just wanted to kind of pick your brains, really, and talk to someone who's better at poker than we are to tell us what we're doing wrong, or better than that, affirm that actually we're not as bad as we think we are.
Absolutely. I can help you with that, although I'm not the best MTT player, as everyone knows, but I'll give it a fair shot, and we'll see what we can do.
I have a couple of cash game hands I want to run by you. So I will say that this won't make sense if you're just listening to the podcast, but Nick's got like a black turtleneck and a goatee. Like, where's the beatnik poetry?
It's not a turtleneck. It's a hoodie. You're killing me.
you look like you should be like standing on a corner smoking a long cigarette and hate Ashbury.
Sure. Absolutely. Beat poetry is my jam.
So right. I don't have any specific hands, Joe. I just have a couple of kind of generic, I know it's tough, right, to say that any two situations are the same, but they are kind of things which I think people may encounter. So maybe more kind of general. So maybe just get to those first and then do some specific hand analysis from your cash games in Colorado and Tulsa. So I played two Aria dailies, Nick, this weekend at Vegas, a 240 and a 160. Of course, the 240, nothing happened, and Michelle made the final table and chopped it, as she always does. However, on the Sunday, I did come in with a different mindset. And I came in with a kind of attitude that the reason why I'm playing a relatively low buy-in is to just kind of be a little bit more aggressive, open, more opening range, adding more bluffs, being more situationally aware, playing more hands from the hijack and the cutoff, and it worked. And to cut a long story short, I had a deep run. I made the final table and was able to chop it. And I think you probably saw from my Insta story that someone proposed doing a deal when I had four big blinds. And I'm like, yes, please. Because like the next payout was like,
you gotta be like this. You gotta be like, yeah, all right, sure, I guess. I mean,
I'll take a look at the numbers.
I'm going to need a little bit more.
Perfect. But just to be clear, I mean, I was the shortest stack by far. The next payout was like $320 and I got 611. So I'm like, hello, winning. But this is what I find difficult. And you know the type of tournament I'm talking about, Nick. Do you know the type of player that you have? You are going to see less optimal play. So you often see a lot of limping. And this is not what I would call strategic limping. People who have limping as part of their arsenal, they just limp pretty much 100% of their range. So when you find yourself in mid-position with a hand like King-Jack offsuit, mm-hmm. or ace five offsuit, mm-hmm. the kind of hand where maybe you'd be tempted to open if you were the first player into the pot, what are you meant to do with hands like that where there have been limps and sometimes calls in front of you?
That's a great question. So I guess the important thing to note here is to identify if people are limping with 100% of their range or close to it, or if they are indeed the kind of, you know, the Gibbons situation, right? So under these circumstances, if you find somebody that's limping a lot, the idea sort of theoretically is that you want to raise to isolate them, right? So if there's already been a limp and you're making it 2.5 big blinds as a normal open, you might make it 3.5 big blinds. You want to add a big blind per limper. That's very commonly this sort of suggestion. But you also want to change kind of the range that you're going to be using there, because you're not opening the pot anymore. You're not starting the action from the position that you're in. You're playing against, you're going to end up playing against at least one opponent most of the time because they like to limp and they like to call. So you want hands that have better playability as opposed to, you know, just looking at a conventional starting opening range. So for example, King Jack is a great example. King Jack has great playability against the kind of hands that like to limp, and generally speaking, plays well, probably even better than hands like Ace 5 offsuit, right? Ace 5 offsuit is probably a combination you might open from the cutoff or from the button. However, if there's been a limp early position, sometimes their earlier limping, their earlier limps will be sort of hands that dominate you. But also Ace 5, if you don't hit an ace or, you know, make a straight or, you know, even top pair is quite difficult to play. It just doesn't have good sand graft invisibility, as it were, as you go through the streets. Whereas, you know, suited connectors, you know, 8-7 suited, you know, Jack 10 suited, you know, King Queen suited, those kinds of hands sort of go up in value because they have better playability. And of course, if there's limpers, you're always going to play in position against them. So to exploit that, I would just say size up your bets after you see the limp very slightly, but also choose hands that have good options post flop and have good visibility and playability, and then proceed from there. And hopefully you'll be able to take advantage of their passive play.
Interesting to hear the Broadway combos, though, potentially have more value than the small aces. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. But here's my counterpoint, though.
Yeah.
Don't punish the limpers, because they're going to call, you're going to miss, and they're going to hit their hand 100% of the time. So play a smaller pot.
That is the kind of mindset I'm trying to get out of. It's hard, though. It's really, really hard to not play results when results ultimately dictate who wins.
Yeah.
My follow-up question, Nick, and it is a kind of specific but also general, because you do see weird stuff like this a lot in this type of tournaments. Still relatively early stages, so the average stack is probably still around 50 big blinds.
Okay.
So we're talking like the 200, 300 blind level. And you have I find myself under the gun plus two. So under the gun opens to 1200, which is a 4x open.
Okay.
Under the gun plus one calls, and I have king queen. What am I meant to do with a hand like that? Am I meant to call? Am I meant to three bet? Because I just am tempted to fold in that spot.
I think your instinct is correct, James, because also, you know, like I have this conversation on the stream quite often, especially about cash games, because cash games tend to be very limp call heavy, you know, lots of multi-way pots and lots of action where you're not really well trained on it versus what you might play online. The fold is fine, absolutely. I mean, the suited version obviously has better playability, but what you need to remember, especially when you're that early in position, James, is there's still action to happen behind you, regardless of whether or not what's happening in front of you is going to be a nightmare in the first place, right? And so really in those situations, if you're in those kinds of games, the name of the game is basically knit it up and wait for good opportunities, but then also to push your edge when you're in position the way we described. So if there's lots of passive limping, you want to be in there creating bigger pots in position when you know they're going to make mistakes from out of position. But also to Joe's point, which actually has some serious validity, you can also afford to kind of just bet when you got it as well, right? A lot of the conventional wisdom that you studied to become a better player kind of goes out the window when you know that you can just get paid when you have a hand. So you need to be patient. But also, having said that, the kind of tournaments you're playing tend to be quite turbo-y. So it's not always, it's kind of two contradicting things. You have players that you can exploit if you have time, but you have a limited time amount to do it because of the way that the tournaments are structured in the dailies. So it is a tricky balance to find.
Thanks, Nick. Okay, Joe, give Nick a specific hand to brutalize.
All right, so I'm playing 1-3 no limit hold'em, Blackhawk, Colorado. And in Blackhawk, Colorado, they allow a straddle from any position.
Okay.
Now, I've bought in for $400, but I'm down to about 270.
Okay.
All right. I am under the gun plus one.
Okay.
But there is a button straddle to $69.
Perfect. Nice.
Because you can straddle from any position for any amount.
Oh, is that how? Okay. So, and also, Joe, just to clarify, they can straddle from any position for any amount. And do they always act last?
It does give them last action before the flop. Well, wow. This one was on the button, so it would give you. Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't matter anyway.
Joe,
okay,
I know you're looking to Nick for analysis, but can I just chime in here and say at this point I rack my chips and leave the game? But carry on.
Well, here's the thing. So the blinds fold and it gets to me, and I have pocket sevens.
Okay, I got you.
So my options here are fold, call $69, or raise. And I elect to go all in, Nick. Okay. I go all in for $270 yep. with about six people still to act behind.
Okay. And do you want the analysis to start from here?
The hand's over. Nobody calls, including the guy who put in $69 couldn't even find a hand to call with.
All right.
And the only reason I'm this is more of a confirmation kind of thing.
Yep.
I'm not really good at making this move very often.
Yep.
And so I just would like to know if I did the right thing.
In my opinion, absolutely yes, 100%. Because effectively what you're saying is we've dealt everybody at the table a set of random cards, and one person is putting in the biggest blind of all time. And if you imagine pocket sevens versus any two cards, it's an absolute monster. Like, you're actually doing very, very well, because, you know, it's not the same as if somebody actually chose to play that hand and then you're all in and now they might actually have hands to call you. They have any two cards, and the amount of dead big blinds in the middle is so high that you're just unlucky if you run into it. And like, if you were in that situation, Joe, and you had, you know, 900 big blinds and you were shoving in five people had you covered behind, you're risking way too much in relation to what you stand to win, even though it still probably works out as a fold a lot of the time. But in that situation, you have less than 100 big blinds. Somebody's already put out a huge chunk out there by putting in $69. I think the shove is great. I think that's exactly what you want to do in that spot. And that goes to show you how cash games can be augmented a lot by that sort of other play, right? You know, as soon as there's sort of side action and there's like, you know, bomb pots and stuff like that, or people are going, I'm going to bet $50 in every hand, no matter what happens, you need to think on your feet. And actually, I think you did the right thing. I would have done exactly the same.
Cool.
Yeah.
One for one. I just won hand of the century of the day.
Nick, before we let you go, tell us what's coming up on the PokerStars Twitch channel in the coming weeks, days.
I'm glad you brought that up, James, because guys, 2025 is super, super exciting for me, because it's going to be a lot of the stuff that we've come to know and love. Sunday Million, WCoop, Scoop, potentially more stuff from the BSOP or from APPT. And of course, you know, these other things we've come up, like Chat Pro Poker Show, Streamer Showdowns are going to be at least once monthly now. However, in 2025, I have the opportunity to launch for the first time ever twitch.tv/Nick Walsh TV. I'll have my own platform, my own channel.
Nice.
And we're going to be dividing some of the content. Because what ended up happening, guys, was over the last 3 years, I've been sort of developing the central channel, and we've come up with some great stuff, and it's very PokerStars centric. And then everyone goes, Nick, we want to see you play Spinning Goes. And to me, it just felt a bit weird that the Nick Walsh TV play sort of cards up was on the central channel. So it also kind of made me feel as though I don't want to go live randomly, like on a random Saturday when it's not scheduled on the official mm-hmm. channel, when it's just going to be of me course. And people are going, oh, there must be some big event on. So that way I'm going to take some of my personal stuff into my own personal channel. But also it means I get to experiment a lot more, because it's not the official PokerStars channel. I can have more guests on. I'm going to do more giveaways. We're going to have more sort of like, you know, cash game streams where it's going to be a little bit
nudity?
More loosey-goosey. Potentially nudity. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah! I knew we were going to have nudity in this show. I told you.
and also we're going to potentially think about doing other weird streams, like cooking streams. Anybody that watched my streams know I talk a lot about cooking and also air frying in particular.
Nick,
it's a bit of a meme.
Nick.
Yes.
Nick, this might be the way you get me to come visit you in Brighton. I would do a cooking stream with you so hard. Oh, my God.
All right. We got it. That's going to be good. But also, guys, in 2025, I wanted to announce this as well. It's kind of an announcement. It hasn't started yet, but this is the best time to mention it. In 2025, I'm doing something that's going to be called something like the 250K Heads Up Challenge. And basically what that means is I'm playing $250,000 worth of Heads Up Hyper Sit and Goes over the course of 2025. And I'm going to document all of it in short form, and it's going to end up on Instagram Reels or on YouTube Shorts. And if you guys want to follow that, I would love for you to give me a follow on my socials, Nick Walsh TV, everywhere. And it's going to be cool, guys, because it's been a while since I competed at any reasonably high levels in those sorts of games. And they're some of the most notoriously difficult games to beat, because everyone who plays them is kind of an end boss.
Well, in time honored fashion, Nick, good luck with that. And as far as the regular cards upstream are concerned, so Chat Pro Poker Show is still a thing.
Yep.
And Sunday Million on Monday nights.
Yep.
Who's going to be with you this coming Monday?
This coming Monday, I got Griffin joining me, guys. So if you like Griffin,
so
Griffin action.
Our
stepson.
Absolutely. But it's always great to have everyone on. We have fantastic guests and also Griffin. So thank you, Griffin, for joining us.
Well, Nick, we're going to check in with you again soon because this is obviously going to be a regular segment of the show. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're going to get advice from a number of people, but you're someone
who
always talks...
Hand of the century of the day!
Yes. You're basically someone who talks in terms that I can understand. So sure. In that regard, you're a very useful resource to us and a very good friend and a very kind colleague. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
Okay, we are getting to the end of our first episode of 2025. But before we go, we need to introduce our first superfan of the year, Michael Pinciaro. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you, James?
We are good. So Joe's already revealed that you two not only know each other, but Joe has been, I assume, in the very building where you are now.
Yes, he has been in our house. Poker. It came to our poker night back in June.
I even got a home-cooked meal from Mrs. Pinciaro.
Well, she's right here. Can she just pop her head in and say hello?
Hello there.
I'm glad she's there because I have a question. Does she slice the garlic really thin with a razor blade?
Very, very, yes.
That's a good fellow's scene.
Which, coincidentally, by the way, because as I'm sure you'll know already, it was Statrick who was tasked with compiling the quiz for this week's Superfan Contest. Patrick's favorite scene in Goodfellas is the cutting of the garlic with the razor blade while Paulie's in prison.
The classic scene. It's a classic scene. I mean, I grew up in an Italian-American family, so yeah, I experienced that growing up with my grandparents. So
yes, Michael, let's get to know you a little bit. We talk about me all the time on the show, but we don't talk about you. Tell everyone what your deal is or used to be.
What my deal is? Well, hey, I'm currently retired, plan to stay that way. I spent most of my working career in healthcare analytics, grew up in Boston, Massachusetts, lived in Columbus, Ohio for a while. That's where I met Rose, my lovely wife, Rose. Chicago for about 6 years, and we've been in the Houston, Texas area now for 20 years.
I went to a very interesting home game. James, their home game was the one we don't have to get too far into, but there was like a militant Trump supporter who is also an immigrant, and it was like mind-blowing.
Well, he was at the inauguration, in case you,
I'm not surprised. Interested. Nice guy, though. Nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Amir's a good guy. He really is. We really like him.
As a resident of Texas, Michael, obviously you're not eligible to win a Power Pass, but we can offer you enhanced Poker in the Ears merchandise, including the coveted Pight playing cards with the custom Joe and James Jacks. But that means you have to win the quiz, and the quiz is about the movie Goodfellas. We've already revealed that. I love this movie. I think it's a great movie. But Joe, you sometimes seem a little bit kind of like lukewarm about this Scorsese classic.
The first time I saw it, I didn't get it. I didn't know what all the fuss was about. And that was when I was in college, so I was probably 19. And then I gave it another shot maybe 5 years later and got it a little bit more, but still didn't blow me away. And I give it a watch about every 5 years, and it still doesn't ever like cross like a 7.5 for me. And I know that's like sacrilege. I think part of it is, maybe you can speak to this, Michael, a little bit, is that, so I got a lot of family members that are these types of people, and it grosses me out. Like, I've never had even Sopranos, everything like this, like, really makes me uncomfortable when I watch it. So that's kind of, I don't really have the affinity for gangsters a lot of other people do.
Well, I mean, the appeal to a movie like Goodfellas or the Sopranos series is that it just shows these people for exactly who they are. Contrast it with The Godfather, where it was where the characters in The Godfather were not presented as evil characters or horrible characters, whereas in Goodfellas and the Sopranos, we see them as they really are. You know, we see the psychopath in them. We see the family orientation of some of these people.
I'm gonna pull you up there. I don't disagree entirely, But I do think both movies are potentially guilty of romanticizing gangster culture a little bit. And I would also say that Michael Corleone in Godfather Part II is the epitome of pure evil. As far as he's very much not a hero in that movie and never is depicted as someone who doesn't get his hands dirty. But we're not here to debate cinema. We are here to do a quiz and hopefully give you some prizes. I've got a 10-question quiz compiled by StatTrick. And Michael, as our guest, as our super fan, you get to go first on the board.
Okay. Let's do it.
I need a number between 1 and 10.
Let's go 6.
Number 6. Why was Henry so impressed by Jimmy the first time they met? Ooh. Multiple choice options are available if you need them.
Why was he impressed?
Oh, I might have a shot here.
I'm going to go to multiple choice on this one.
Okay, was it that Jimmy had a nice jacket? Was it that Jimmy was giving money to everyone? Was it that Jimmy had a nice car? Or was it that Jimmy shot someone?
I watched the movie last night. Why don't I remember this? I think it was because he was giving money to everyone.
It was indeed. And that gets you the first point of the game. Joe, you can have any number other than 6.
I just want to say that... Michael and Rose have seen me do stand-up twice in the last year, so I really can't take anything else away from them. I hope that he wins. Okay, I'm gonna go with number 5, please. Like, because I'm picturing Jimmy slipping people $5 bills.
Okay, question number 5. What ingredient does Henry feel there was too much of in the pasta sauce?
I'll take the choices.
Garlic?
Yeah.
Onion? Chili? Pork?
I don't... God. Onion.
He used too many onions, and we're 1 point each. Okay, any number other than 5 or 6, Michael?
9.
Joe's lucky number 9.
Damn it.
Why can't Jimmy and Henry ever be made men?
Because they are not full-blooded Italian.
Correct. With Irish blood, they can never Irish be made. So that's full 2 points.
So there was a guy at my table last night here in Tulsa wearing a hat that said FBI. And a lot of times you expect that to be a full-blooded Italian hat. But this guy stood for firmly believes in Jesus.
Right, because the other NAF one I see is female body inspector.
Right. I found a new one last night.
Great. Glad to know that people are still having fun with FBI hats and t-shirts in 2025. 5, 6, and 9 are gone, Joe. The rest of the world is your oyster.
10, please.
Question number 10. When Henry's parents get letters about Henry's truancy, where do Paulie's crew put the mailman's head? And to be clear, it's still attached to his body. They don't decapitate him.
I'm gonna take a swing at this one. They shove it through a fence.
No, they shove it in the pizza oven.
Yeah, I don't think I would have got that.
Okay, so you are up 3 points to 1, Michael, as we go into the next round. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, or 8.
Let's do 2.
Nice softball for you. Who says the infamous line, "Go home and get your shine box"?
Billy Batts.
Billy Batts for 2 points. Joe.
That was a 2-point question, so I'll take number 2.
That was question 2.
Man, I'm good. Question 1.
Best on air talent, ladies and gentlemen. Question number 1. What is the name of the book that the film is based on?
I'll take the choices, please.
The Fence, Goodfellas, Whacker, or Wise Guy?
Wise Guy.
Henry Hill's Wise Guy is the book. 2 points for Joe, 5 points for Michael going into the penultimate round. 3, 4, 7, and 8 still available.
I'll take 8.
Question number 8. Which actor plays the role of Spider?
Michael Imperioli.
Indeed, an early appearance from Michael Imperioli.
Don't I look like him? People used to tell me all the time. Back when he wasn't on The Sopranos, when I worked at a grocery store, people were like, "You look like the kid that gets shot by Joe Pesci in Goodfellas."
Three, four, or seven, Joe?
Three.
After beating Karen's neighbor, what does Henry give to her to hide?
Money. A whole bunch of money.
No, it's the revolver that he uses to beat the guy around the face.
Oh, no. I was thinking, what did he give Karen to hide? What'd you do with the money, Karen?
No, he does give Karen the revolver to hide, and he hides the money that she then...
Oh.
Yeah. Whoops. Four and seven.
Oh, I'll take questions. Four.
For your final question, question number four. What does Paulie refuse to have in his house?
What does he refuse to have in his house?
His trans son.
No, I don't think I somehow don't think that's correct.
You can take the options if you want, Michael. Yeah, you're way ahead in this quiz.
Give me the
okay, options. Is it drugs, dogs, telephones, or guns?
I would say it's guns.
It's telephones. Relay messages to him because he refuses to have a phone in the house. And last but by no means least, Joe, it's always coming seven. What was the name of Henry's mistress?
I'll take the choices.
Is it Janice, Audrey, Jane, Louisa?
Janice.
Janice Rossi is a whore, according to Karen. That gives you a point. That gives you a score of three overall. But, Michael, with a score of seven, you are a winner. Congratulations. You've taken down the first 2025 edition of Superfan vs. Stapes, so you're going to get the enhanced Pite merch pack.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Michael, great to see you as always.
Well, hopefully we'll see you back in Houston sometime doing stand-up.
I actually might be going there again soon. The headliner I worked with last weekend, his name's Pat Bircher. He was like, dude, you're hilarious. I'm going to send you my schedule. You can come open for me anywhere.
Well,
and he mentioned Houston.
All right. If you're here, we're there.
Awesome. Thanks. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for coming on the show. We'll see you soon.
All right. Take care, guys. Thank you.
All right, my babies, that's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. What did you think? A little bit different, and I think more changes are coming, but that felt good.
I enjoyed this week's show. I really did. As ever, look forward to your feedback on our Discord channels. Discord is still a thing, even though we're not really using it for Superfan applications anymore. Well, we kind of are. Anyway, PokeStars Discord server, link in the podcast description. Join and have a conversation. Tell us what you think about the show as we make further changes throughout 2025.
Coming up next time, it's Welcome to 2025 Part 2 as we cover some of the major poker that we missed in the last few weeks, including the New Year's series. And Spraggy had like this clandestine trip to Brazil. Like, I didn't even know about it till he posted from it.
Yes. So this is the man who, by the way, has just hit 100,000 subscribers on YouTube and just had a 10K score. And he is going to be our guest host next week.
See, told you we're shaking things up this year.
Exactly.
Bringing in guest hosts.
The duo becomes a trio with the addition of Benjamin Spraggy Sprag.
That's right. And Spraggy's going to fill us in on the Creator's Cup. And he's got, does he have some kind of... Anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll be joined by Spencer Owen. One of the creators is going to be playing in the event of the Irish Open. Okay, yeah, Creators Cup. I need to know what this is. That's the thing I got booted out of in Brazil.
So, yeah, they've replicated that format for the UK, and we've got all these creators. So Spraggy, for example, is mentoring John Nellis, who sadly is not available next week. So Spencer Owen, who is actually Rory's creator, is going to be joining us. We'll get an idea of, like, what he's doing, what he's working on. I believe it concludes at the Irish Open in the spring. So yeah, we'll get all the details from Spraggy next week.
Okay, good. I don't need to know about it right now. And we're going to get Spraggy to do some commentary on the, what did you get owned by Marley or something?
Several times. So yeah, so I played in a cash game that was live streamed from the Hippodrome just before Christmas. There's one hand in particular. I need Spraggy to tell me just how badly I butchered the hand against Marley. So yes, hand of the century of the day will be back.
Awesome. And as we mentioned, you know the email address now to apply to be Superfan. But just in case you don't, it's...
Superfan@PokerStarsInt.com.
All right, my babies, that is all the time we have got for this week's show. Until next time, For James Hardigan, should I name everyone who was on the show? No. For James Hardigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Smell you later.